Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And it's me, Ryan.
I'm Ryan. Ryan's not here. Just the original crew. Just me and you again.
It's just us.
Ryan, in case you're wondering, is actually, he's an accountant, but also moonlights as a train conductor. And he's like, he's actually conducting the train that's bringing Joe Biden back from Ukraine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, he's out of the country on a presidential mission.
What do you have time to get a train conductor license?
Oh, he says he's an accountant, but I've never seen him do math. So.
There's been no evidence that he knows math.
Right. He'll just like throw words like securities and mutual funds, and we're like, yeah, sure, that sounds about right. But are those real accountant things? I don't even know.
Sounds like John's on to you, Ryan.
So this is the Nintendo Show, the best day of Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the official show for the month of February 2023. We're going to talk a little bit of news.
I didn't even know Biden was in the Ukraine.
Yeah, well, nobody knew he was going there until he showed up in the Capitol and be like, it's me, Joe Biden, I'm here.
That sounds just like him.
But, like, yeah, he couldn't. I am Joe Biden.
Oh, gosh.
Of course, like, it's, you can't, like, fly in secretly. So he took a train because it's safer because, you know, you can't get shot down in a train.
But
it's also a bit more it's a bit more secretive.
Easier to surround a train.
It's true. But it's
like a tank because you're done.
Because trains are, I guess, on the ground, it's harder to maybe detect. I don't know. It's military shit. It was easier to sneak someone in on a train. But yeah, it was like covert. He probably like. We're like a tactile neck and everything. But that's something we'll discuss on the retro show 21 years from now.
So I really hope we get to that. That would be funny.
We got news. We have a little bit of news. We got one gospel or gossip.
Ooh, Ryan's missing out.
This is probably going to feel more like a mini show because we got a lot of new games that we're going to get through. And then we'll take a peek into March and see what games are coming out then. But let's get into it.
Sure.
We got a few games announced. My main source for new game announcements, like it was just a YouTube channel to post videos of anytime a new Switch game was announced. They're not doing that anymore. So I have far less like resources on hand.
Because one channel isn't...
Right. Like there are no really other sources that will just...
I was about to say, you really put all your eggs in one basket there.
That was the only basket. I had all these eggs in one basket to put them in. Standard news sites, you know, even things like that are more niche, like Go Nintendo, Nintendo Life, they won't like post about every single game that's announced for Switch. Just the big ones. So, I mean, hopefully I'll be able to find a new source soon, because otherwise we're just kind of stuck with the largest announcements, and even the ones I have here are still pretty niche. So Steam World Build was new game announced from Thunderful and Image Inform. So Steam World, we recognize this franchise.
Yeah.
Steam World Dig, Steam World Heist, Steam World Quest. The next one they're doing is a town building game. I'm pumped
because
I love town building.
Yeah,
and there seems to be a bit of like
if the whole Breath of the Wild could have been Tarrytown.
Tarrytown, yeah, perfect.
It was Tarrytown.
Perfect game.
Just Link building a town.
Yeah, yeah.
The mayor.
Be the mayor of Tarrytown.
The mayor.
But yeah, it looks to have like some sort of resource management as well. You send people down, like robots down to work in the mine and get your resources to build your town. So yeah, looks like it could be pretty cool. Probably not what people expected them to do with another SteamWorld game. But
well, they really messed with the formula a lot with SteamWorld when it comes to... I don't know what the original SteamWorld Dig was, but Heist was like a turn-taking combat, and then
right.
Was like a card.
So, yeah, the original SteamWorld game, the first one, as far as I know, was called SteamWorld Tower Defense, and it was a DSiWare game, and it was not good. Then, of course, you get SteamWorld Dig, SteamWorld Heist, Dig 2, Quest, and like you were saying, it's... inverse platform where you just dig down. SteamWorld Heist is a tactical turn-taking game. And
Quest, I liked Heist, but yeah. I sucked at it and I got my ass kicked.
Heist was really cool. You know, there were a few things that made Heist a lot easier, like when you get guns that have a laser sight so you can see the trajectory and where your shots are going to ricochet. But anyway, neither here nor there. A couple other little RPGs, Rhapsody, Marl Kingdom Chronicles is coming to Switch. And that's, I think, a collection of two old school, like Super Nintendo or PS1 RPGs that are coming to Switch. And also Disgaea 7 Vow of the Virtueless is confirmed coming to North America. That's a hell of a name.
Yeah, that is intense.
Yeah. Really cool. So, one quick gospel or gossip, and then we'll move on to some other news.
See, I don't have Ryan here to like...
It's true.
Yeah.
But they're...
What do you think, Sherlock?
The new rumor going around is that Mercury Steam, who developed Metroid Samus Returns remake for 3DS, as well as Metroid Dread on Switch, the rumor is that they are working on a new 2D Metroid game. What do you think, Wes? Think there could be any truth to that? I think it'd be smart.
Yeah, I mean, they just came out with Prime. They got... Dread was good.
Well, they
came out with Prime. They got Mercury, momentum.
Yeah, Mercury Steam, of course, didn't work on Prime. But,
no, but, you know, it's still Metroid. And so
Yeah.
There's momentum for just the genre that people would want.
Which is good. Yeah, it's nice to see this kind of becoming a more vibrant franchise again after it kind of went dormant in 2010.
It really went dead for a while.
Yeah, after Other M, of course, the really negative reaction, there was nothing between that and...
Which I think Other M was fine.
Yeah. I liked it as an action game. You skip all the cutscenes, play it on mute, and you got a solid, a really fast-paced action game. Yeah. But the only thing in between that and Samus Returns in 2017, 7 years later, was Federation Force, which wasn't really a Metroid game.
No.
So...
I would like to say gospel, because it would be smart. They had a lot of success with Dread.
Mm.
Prime's coming out, so Metroid is on people's minds. Well, Prime already came out. I mean, it's just there's momentum there, so.
I'm with you. I'm going to say gospel for this one as well. I think that since Dread was the best-selling Metroid game since Metroid Prime on GameCube, I think that they're going to get another crack at it and do another 2D Metroid game. And of course...
Metroid Prime 4. They're going to take the reins for
it. Oh, God, they're going to restart development again and make Metroid Prime a 2D side-scrolling. I think Metroid Dread was 2020-ish. I think it'd be a couple more years
was
before.
Was it 21?
I don't think it was 21. I think it was 2020.
I don't feel like it was that.
Maybe it was 2021.
Wow, that'd be crazy if it was 2020, because I feel like that was... A long time ago.
Maybe you're right. Maybe it was 21.
I don't know.
But either way, I still think we're a couple years out from seeing another 2D Metro game, possibly even on a successor system. We'll find out. We'll only know if it ever happens. So let's get to some of the other news bits. Just a couple of quick hits here. There is going to be a Pokemon Presents in just a few days here on February 27th.
So here we go, another remake.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I think, you know, we'll probably see stuff about, like, mobile games. Maybe something from Pokemon Unite, if that's still a thing.
Maybe a DLC announcement for Scarlet Violet.
I think that'll probably be the big thing
that
we'll see out of this, is what sort of expanded content they will have for this game that has sold in excess of 20 million copies. But I'm not... I don't expect like a brand new game or remake or anything like that announced.
No, I think that's real soon.
I think the Pokemon content for the year will probably be the expanded content for Scarlet Violet, much like they did with Sword Shield. Like the content for that year was the expanded content. I think we're still a little ways out from a Black White remake, which would be the next remake up. We'll see. I mean, it did take a long time.
Black Friday was good, though.
Yeah, it was real good. I want to see them do, like, a team up with Square Enix and do, like, an Octopath Traveler art style for Black White.
Oh, that'd be so interesting.
Just, like a highly detailed pixel art.
Oh, that'd be really interesting.
But I don't think that that's likely
to happen. Oh, definitely. They'll probably go to, like, still with that chibi design like they did with Diamond Pearl.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it'll run a little bit smoother.
Yeah.
It might even not even be a Switch game, because we did wait quite a long time between the Gen 3 remakes and the Gen 4 remakes. But anyway, Speaking of presentations, there is a Super Mario movie direct coming on March 9th.
I'm on board.
Sure. I mean, I don't need to see more of that movie to know I'm going to see it.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of interesting that a movie is getting a direct. They've, of course, never done that before because they never had a Nintendo movie come out while they've been doing Nintendo Directs. But, yeah. All right.
I'm actually kind of excited about this movie. I'm really interested to see how...
I think it's going to be good.
If it's good or not, yeah.
I think it's going to be good. On the same day, Level 5, who we talked about when they did the Nintendo Direct... back at the beginning of the month, Level 5 is hosting a presentation of their own on that day. And they're going to show some more stuff about the new Layton game, Deca Police, Fantasy Life, Inazuma 11. Most of these games are already confirmed coming to Switch. We'll see if they have any other Switch announcements. But yeah, we'll, you know, keep the announcements rolling with some Level 5 stuff. And Wes might be the most important news of the month. The Metroid Prime 4 remake, the physical version, if it actually exists, the cover art is reversible.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's a big deal.
That's amazing.
Reversible cover art is awesome. I barely use that.
All cover art should be reversible. in fact, like physical games should just come with like multiple sleeves so you can have all sorts of different cover arts. You can customize it the way however you want. But yeah, really, really cool. But you know, they say that there's a physical version of this game. I'm not so sure it exists.
People are blowing up my phone and coming into the store and everything. Like, do you have Metroid Prime? I'm like, no. Like, I thought it was just digital only. Like, until guests started harassing me about this thing, did I realize, oh, this thing got a physical?
You didn't have a SKU for it?
No. I don't even think it's on the Target website.
God, that is bizarre. So, one of our buddies in the Discord group was able to get a copy from a Best Buy, had a pre-order at Best Buy. But there have been a lot of people who have been having problems finding a physical version of this game. Another buddy of ours in the Discord group had to go to a bunch of different spots before they finally found a physical version of this game.
I just went again. Target on their website doesn't carry the thing.
There are some locations who, like, if they got anywhere, getting like a max of 4 or 5 copies. That's not great. It's not great. You could be selling a lot more if you just had it in stock. And I gotta assume that at some point this game will be in stock, because yeah, I'd like to buy it physically. I haven't bought the digital version because, one, I don't have time to play through Metroid Prime right now with all the other RPGs coming out. But by the time like April rolls around, I'll have finished off a bunch of the other ones and need a game. It'd be nice to be able to buy that one physically.
In April, you're gonna have Advance Wars,
but not until like middle of April.
I'm
gonna need some for the beginning of April. And Metroid Prime, like, if I stretch it out, it'll probably take, like, 2 weeks to get through.
Do you have, like, a calendar somewhere that just has, like, sections mapped out for video games? It's just a gaming calendar.
Not a calendar, but I do have a notebook. And I kind of, and what
dear
I do...
God.
Well, what I do is I look at when games are coming out, and I kind of, like, make the list of when it comes out and how much time I want to set aside. Like, for a game like Octopath Traveler, I've set aside, like, 2 months of time. Like, let's plan on just having this game. What that does for me is, like, I'll take a look at how long games will take to finish, if that information is available, and that will keep me from just impulse buying all these games and never finishing them, because, like, well, no, I have Octopath Traveler 2. I don't have to, I know I have a certain amount of time that I have that I'll be able to get through it. I mean, if it takes longer or shorter, it doesn't matter.
I got like at least 4 games that I bought and just haven't even started.
Because
they weren't on sale, so I didn't balls buy them.
It's an easy trap to fall. And, you know, it is good, like, if a game goes on, like, deep discount, like, there's nothing wrong with, like, grabbing it and banking it for later, or quitting whenever you're playing and moving it to another one. Nothing wrong with that. It's just easier for me to resist trying to buy every single new game that comes out if I see, like, well, no, I don't need to buy Atelier Rise of 3. I already have these other games, and I played a bit of 2. I didn't like it all that much. It was fine. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah.
So, kind of eliminates that fear of missing out. So that's why it's great that the Metroid Prime remake cover art's reversible. For that reason right there. Did you hear about that Microsoft Nintendo contract?
No.
So, God. First of all, this is such fucking bullshit. There's This isn't real.
This is a bad... Whatever it is, it's a bad idea.
This isn't real. It's not real. So one of the VPs, I forget his name, at Microsoft, it wasn't Phil Spencer, who I guess is like the sort of head honcho at Xbox specifically, but this is a Microsoft VP, sent out a tweet and a press release saying that Microsoft and Nintendo have entered a 10-year legally binding, made sure to mention it was legally binding, contract to bring Xbox games to Nintendo systems.
Oh, dear God.
And then went on to specifically mention Call of Duty, which is a game owned by a company that they don't own yet. They don't own Microsoft doesn't own Call of Duty
yet. They will. Microsoft will one day rule the world.
Well, they... what this is a lot of posturing to try to make it seem like they're not trying to monopolize the game industry, which they are.
Yeah.
By buying Activision, because they're getting a lot of pushback from other, from Sony specifically, other game publishers and developers, as well as the FCC, industry advocates, trying to put a halt to this $70 billion acquisition that Microsoft is trying to push through. And they're trying to sort of throw up this smokescreen, like, we're not trying to monopolize. Look, we're going to put Xbox games on other platforms, and we want to put it on a PlayStation. I'm sure you do. First of all, from the Nintendo perspective, I am more interested in Xbox putting games like Hi-Fi Rush on Switch than I am Call of Duty. Don't give a fuck about Call of Duty. But if Microsoft ever gets to the point where they own Activision Blizzard and they're trying to bring Call of Duty to Switch or Switch successor, it'll be like a cloud-based thing.
Yes.
It won't be the thing you want, because they're saying like it'll be content parity, release date parity with other platforms, that you're going to have to do a cloud version if you're going to try to do it on the current Nintendo console. They won't do the Xbox Series X version of that game. It just won't. No. Which is fine. I don't want it to.
Like I said before in past podcasts, Nintendo's for certain games, and then the Xbox and PlayStation are for other games. Like, I don't feel like games like Witcher and Call of Duty and Elder Scrolls, and although Skyrim on Switch is fine, it's a PS3 game, runs fine. But those kind of games, they should be on like the PlayStation and the Xbox. Where Nintendo should be like the Mario's and the Xenoblades, the Octopaths. That's where I want to play my RPGs and my platformers and fun, goofy stuff.
There are some things where I would like to have like the one stop, everything on Nintendo console, just the stuff I'm interested in. So stuff like Persona, had not been on Nintendo console before. Hopefully in the future, Atlus brings Persona to Nintendo consoles. Hopefully with whatever successor system Nintendo has, like Capcom will be able to bring more stuff like Resident Evil remakes to Nintendo platforms in the future. That's the kind of content parody stuff that I want to see. You can keep your first-person shooters. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Like those games that are like super flashy with high definition and in-depth. I mean, yeah, like I just started playing Harry Potter. It is ridiculous how pretty that game is. Like, holy shit. I was not mentally prepared for that. Like, it floored me. And that system runs so smoothly, the PS5. Like, it's just, there's no load screens. It's just one solid. It's absolutely disgusting what this thing is doing. And I'm only, in like, through the fucking tutorial. And my mind is blown. But, like, that going to the Switch in July? Like,
yeah, we'll see.
There's no way on God's Great Earth that's running on the Switch. Like, fuck. If Witcher isn't be de-res that much to run on the Switch, God forbid. Fucking Harry Potter's gonna look like Final Fantasy VII. It's just me, cute figures walking around.
That would be amazing. That's the Harry Potter game.
That
I
would
want.
Be really funny.
Well, we were talking about this on air. Like, there's a non-zero chance that game just kind of like gets delayed because they're like, oh, yeah, we're still working on it, and then just kind of disappears.
Yeah,
like,
there's no way that's making it to the
like
Switch.
Genshin Impact. Genshin Impact is a weird one though, because that one could run on Switch, but
yeah, I mean, it doesn't run well on PlayStation.
What, Genshin Impact?
Yeah, I don't think it runs very well on PlayStation. There's some little like stuttering here and there with loading areas and stuff.
I don't think it's a particularly good game, but
it's one of those games where I'm playing it and I'm like, this looks so good on paper, but why am I so bored? Like, I don't.
So, I don't know. Like this whole 10-year legally binding contract. I'm sure it's like only legally binding insofar as like if they're able to get their the Activision acquisition put through, because otherwise they can't bring Call of Duty. Like it won't be theirs to bring to Nintendo systems.
There's no reason to. Mm. That's stupid.
And it's I don't know what it is that Microsoft gains out of putting cloud versions of Call of Duty on a Nintendo system. I don't think they gain anything by bending over backwards to get this this franchise onto other systems once they own it, other than they can say, we're not trying to monopolize here. Oh, and it's so funny, because the other thing I wanted to mention about this is Microsoft earlier today, at time of recording, put out a statement basically saying, like, well, PlayStation, like comparing Microsoft to PlayStation home consoles, Switch wasn't involved in the numbers at all, which is, you know, probably embarrassing for them. And it should be embarrassing for them. But they were saying, like, oh, PlayStation is 94% of the market share in Japan, and Xbox is only 6%. In Europe, PlayStation is 80% of the home console market share, and Xbox is only 20%. And, like, worldwide, it's like a 70-30 split between the two of them. Like, PlayStation is 70% of the home console market, and Xbox is 30%. So it's like them saying, like, we're not a monopoly, you're a monopoly. And like, that's like their latest line of defense. Like, let us buy this, we suck. So let us buy everything in order to try to purchase our way into like a bigger market share, to try to cut into that PlayStation lead. Like, I don't think there's much of a chance that Microsoft just pulls the plug and says, never mind, no more Xbox, because I don't think they're the company to sort of give up as quickly on something they've been doing for 20 years. I mean, this isn't like a Zune or a Windows Phone situation where they're just like, never mind, after a couple of years. Like, they've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
So I think there's a certain amount of...
I mean, it does still sell. Everybody wants the PS5. I mean,
it's not like...
It's a better console.
It's not like Wii U levels of failure. It does fine, but yeah, they're not like the home console juggernaut, I think, that they would like to be. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I have multiple Series X's in the store. I don't have any PS5s.
Not anymore, not since you bought that one.
I did buy the last one today.
So, as far as like this 10-year contract, sure, I'll believe it when I see it, whatever. And there was one last thing I was hoping to do with Ryan here, because there's a little game, not much of a game, but it's kind of a guessing game. There's a Japanese gaming magazine, long-running gaming magazine. Yes.
I just got a mental image of Ryan conducting a train.
Wearing the hat,
and he's leaning out the window, and right behind him with his arm around him, also leaning out the window, is Busey, and they're just, the wind's blowing, they're just looking at the stars, and just going down the train tracks.
And they're gonna, in the daytime, they're in the engine, at night, they're in the caboose. But Famitsu is a long-running video game magazine, and every month, they do, like, their most wanted list. They pull Japanese video game players and like, hey, what are your most anticipated games? And I had the top 10 for February here, and I was going to let you guys guess, go back and forth a little bit to see what you think the top 10 most wanted games in Japan were. But Ryan's not here. Do you want to take a stab at any of them? Upcoming games, what do you think Japanese players are looking forward to the most?
God, Dokkan Kingdom.
If there's any justice in the world.
I couldn't even...
Number one, far and away, is Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah,
of course.
Definitely, yeah.
And number two, decently close, is Final Fantasy 16 for the PS5. And after that, there's a pretty big gap.
Final Fantasy 16 for the PS5? I didn't even see that announcement.
Oh yeah, it's coming out this year.
Is it like another like standalone thing, or is it like another MMO like the other one?
No, it's a standalone game, single player.
Yeah. That's what I meant to say.
So there's just the rest of the top 10. Like, there's Tears of the Kingdom, far and away the first one. Final Fantasy 16 is number two. And then there's a decent gap between one and two in the rest of the field. Pikmin 4. at number 3. And I really wanted to rub that in with Ryan here. Pikmin 4 is ahead of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth for PS5.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think that's probably because I don't think Rebirth has a solid release date yet, whereas Pikmin 4 does. Octopath Traveler 2 is number 5. Street Fighter 6, the Resident Evil 4 remake, Kirby Return to Dream Land at number 8.
Oh, I forgot they're doing that Resident Evil 4 remake.
Mm-hmm. It looks good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it still looks fine on the other, like, as it is, really.
Yeah, that's a game, like, it still feels modern playing it. Some game called Pragmata. I don't know what that is. Never heard of it. And then Atelier Ryza 3, rounding out at number 10.
Google.
But, so let's move on to some new releases. So this is kind of going to cover January and February. Things got a little bit squished together because in January we did, you know, our 2022 review show. We also did a preview of 2023. So now that we're getting toward the end of February, we'll be able to get back on track and just go month by month. But let's just talk about real quick some stuff that came out in January. Persona 3 Portable, Persona 4 Golden were both out in January. Did you buy any of them?
I put it on my wish list. So if it ever like goes the bundle, because I'm like, I'm just going to wait for the bundle. If it ever goes heavy sale, I'll probably grab them.
So did you finish Persona 5?
I didn't finish the extra new content. Mm. I just, at that point, I was finally burnt out, and I was like, I just can't get across this finish line. I mean, I just got done 100 plus hours. I was like, I gotta move on.
I think since you really like Persona 5, Persona 4 Golden probably the next one to go to, and if you get a lot out of that, then maybe go to Persona 3. There's pretty significant gaps between 3, 4, and 5, especially the Royal version. Because even between, I'm in July, beginning of July, in my run through of Royal. There are significant additions between the vanilla version and the Royal version of 5. Like, there's a lot, just in terms of how quickly you can level up your social links, just the amount of ways to improve your personal stats. It's easier to get into multitasking, trying to take on multiple things at once. Your baton passes. When you're in a fight and you hit an enemy weakness, in vanilla version, you can do the once again, get another attack in. I don't think that the baton passes were in vanilla version. I think that's new to Royal, which are really handy just to be able to like tag into someone else and exploit another weakness rather than waiting for their turn. And also to just do things like get just a little bit of chip restore to your HP and SP especially. Mm-hmm. It's a good way of managing that.
Did you do the darts game?
The darts game is definitely new to Royal version. That was not in vanilla, and that's a really great way of,
because that boosts your baton pass efficiency. So.
Yeah, which is great. I did that with, I've done it with Ryuji and Anne, and now that I have both the social links with Yusuke and Makoto open, I'm going to get them in there as well.
You can do, it's funny when you do Morgana, because, you know, it's a cat playing darts. I mean,
can you do Morgana?
You can. It's a cat playing darts. It's hilarious.
I've only done it once, and I did the tag team with Anne first, and then it was like, oh, do you want to play again? You can play with Ryuji now. Like, okay, cool. So maybe if I go in there a second time.
They can go up to rank 3.
Yes.
So
I did so well playing darts that I went from 1 to 3 with both of them.
Yep.
Which I'm going to do again, because I'll just save before I go in there.
It's not hard. It's not very hard to do it.
Oh, and I bought that book in the Red Light District, which is new. Like, there's new shops open. There's new books that you can get, new movies that you can rent. But there are books in the Red Light District that do things like make video games easier, make playing darts easier. So I've just been buying all the books that I can, because it's always good to have
reading material.
Yeah, because you never know, like, if you're going to be on the subway, you're just going to get a chance to just read something.
Yeah.
And just being able to always have ways to keep your personal stats growing while you know, just have a free second. Or like having social links that also boost your personal stats are good to have, because it allows you to do two things at once, which that's the name of the game, is try to get as much.
I love it how you do two things.
I love it how you do two things. But like, that's one of the main reasons I keep doing like the social link with the doctor or like the board game player, which is the one that you pointed out today,
yep.
Over in the church. That one will like increase the social link and give you like what, knowledge or is it kindness?
Knowledge.
But that's great to have, just to be able to improve those stats while also giving you more powerful demon fusions. Really cool.
Yeah.
Anything stand out to you about Persona 5 before we close the book on that one?
It's just so good.
Yep.
People need to play it. Mm. It's just, be prepared to sink 100 plus hours into this thing.
Yeah.
God, that game's so good.
Yep. Four, just kind of bring it back to the new releases. Four definitely shares more in common with 5 than 3, but it's still a pretty significant jump. They are structurally very much the same. You're still working on personal stats. You're building your confidant stats to fuse better demons.
I mean, I feel like I will play 3 before 4 because I don't want to go from game into a worse game.
You don't want to like lose decline. Features as you go?
Yeah, just decline into it.
I mean,
those two I would be playing. Like, I would do like your traditional approach, like month by month, just bit by bit here and there. Like, those two games, I wouldn't be like, I'm playing my next 100 hours straight into this sucker and then seeing what happens.
Especially with
just romancing the crap on Makoto because she's the better one.
Objectively not true. but like, 3 especially, since it is one basically like randomly generated, very vanilla dungeon that you're working your way up.
I
think someone would be hard-pressed to say, like, yes, I need to mainline this and get through it, because it does get pretty arduous. Maybe, like, I didn't play the portable version, so maybe the portable version made significant improvements over the standard version on PS2. But, like, in Persona 3, even starting out, you don't have full control over your party members. They just kind of do whatever. You can get to a point where you can give them general instructions, like try to exploit enemy weaknesses. And then you do also get to a point where you have total control over them, like you would in any RPG. But those early goings when they're just kind of like fucking around and you're trying to win a fight, there were a couple of times where I game over it and lost progress. Because like, somebody please exploit the weakness. Like, you have the fucking fire magic. Use it. But yeah, Persona 4 didn't have that problem. Persona 4 also, like, speaking of romance options, they do like... have in Persona 3 they have a very obvious one, like, hey, this is the person you're supposed to be romancing this game. Persona 4 also like has a setup, like, yeah, this is probably the one, but don't do it because there's a better one that comes around later. You'll find out.
I don't trust your taste in Persona women.
You need to
you picked Anne.
The obvious choice, yes. I'm not gonna date the narc. A bookworm, student council.
There's so much growth and so much more depth to her character. No, it's just God. Not on the surface.
No, she is like working with the principal to undermine you at the beginning. Like,
yeah, and then she decides not to because she realizes it's
that's
wrong.
That's her character growth. Guy. She goes from being a narc to not a narc anymore. No,
yeah.
Absolutely not.
She's struggling with the death of her father,
and
who
I'm
was
not
a
gonna...
policeman, and then she decides to follow in his footsteps and become police commissioner one day.
I'm not going to date Futaba because in vanilla
she's
version...
She's socially awkward because she's usually a loner, and then now she has friends and she's like learning all these weird social things.
I'm not going to date Futaba because she's a shut-in and also is significantly younger in the vanilla version, which is creepy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to date... Who's the girl with the feather in her cap, large forehead?
Haru.
I'm not going to date Haru way too late in the game.
And I'm could. Not gonna, I mean, you got plenty of time left to date her.
And I'm not going
to... It's not like when you start dating them, you get more stuff if you date them earlier. Like, you could.
I'm not going to...
Technically, I think you could date all of them.
Yeah, I think you'd be like a Casanova.
I think you totally could just date all of them.
But so you definitely can do that in Persona 4. But then there's a point in Persona 4, if you do that... It all comes to a head, and like there's a big confrontation where like
I think that's also in 5,
where everyone you're dating like confronts you. But like
I think it's in like in 5 on like Valentine's Day or something like that.
I think in
like everybody shows up, you're like, hey, and they're like, this is weird. Like,
I think in 4 it's on Christmas Day, it's on December 25th.
Oof.
And yeah, everyone you're dating shows up, and like there's this confrontation. But like it'd be far more interesting if they all just ditch you. But like. at that point you have to choose one, and that one you choose is just like fine with the things that you've done.
This isn't a bachelor, or it's like, here's my rose. Like, no, it's not.
No,
it's not how life fucking works.
Right. So,
yeah, at least I'm not dating a dumb model. I mean, come on, she's dumb.
And what? Nah, I disagree. Yeah. I disagree. There's a Karen, because she cares about her friend who tried to kill herself.
There's no growth to that character. It's so boring.
No, she goes from kind of wanting to be a model to really wanting to be a model. That is growth. let's see. Oh, Fire Emblem Engage came out in January.
Chapter 11?
I finished it. Are you still doing, like, both normal and hard mode at the same time? Or just focusing on one?
It's so hard. I feel like I suck at this game and then I play normal. Like, this is, like, what? Like, nobody's gained a half HP. Like, it's just such a huge gap in difficulty.
I told this story before. I started on hard mode and I got to, I think it was about 11 or 12 or to where you're at. And then I switched to normal mode because I wanted to grind up the rest of the characters. Normal mode, I mean, you'll get to some more difficult things, but it definitely does not present the same level of challenge as hard mode. Like, it is a significant jump between normal and hard mode.
I mean, I'm having more fun with it. The story has not gotten any better.
Did you get to... What happened to...
I just killed Dad. King of the strong people. I don't even know.
Oh, Diamant and Alcrest Dad?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just killed his dad, and now we're running. So I'm on that mission where we're running.
Oh, so you got the rings taken away.
Rings got taken away.
Yeah.
Which is... interesting.
Wow, that was a great
turn. Here's this big mechanic that, like, this game revolves around, and now we're gonna take them away. So I'm like, shit.
Especially playing on hard mode, when they took the rings away, I was like, what the fuck am I gonna do? Holy shit, now I have to escape? Ooh, yeah, that was a good one.
Ugh. So I'm on that mission right now. It's...
And like you would expect. Yeah. Now you have to go recollect the rings.
Is that all story beat missions and stuff to recollect the... Mm-hmm. Alright, well.
And, you know, doing things like increasing your bond with the different ring emblem characters will unlock your paralogue, your side missions. And the side missions are really cool because they're all, like, callbacks to the games that those characters come from.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them I don't recognize, like Sigurd and... Mm-hmm. Whatever that one red-haired mage lady is.
Selica.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Then Leaf. I think Leaf is from... with Hector and What's-Her-Face, right?
No,
he's from a different one?
Yeah, some of these games, like six of the games, never came out. Well, didn't come out in North America at their original release.
Oh, but okay.
Shadow Dragon, of course, with Marth, came out in North America. And the one with Selica actually came to North America on 3DS with Shadows of Valentia. But I don't think the one with Sigurd ever did. Leaf, I don't think that game ever came out. The game with... I don't want to give too much away. Have you seen any other character? Like, have you seen Lin?
I saw Lin.
Okay.
I haven't gotten that ring, but the one guy was using it. So I saw Lin. I was like, oh shit, she's back. That's great.
Yeah, I can't remember, like, the order that these things came out. Of course, you've seen Micaiah.
I saw Micaiah. I got Micaiah. I saw Baelith, but... I didn't see... They didn't use Baelith. I just one-shot her. Because it's fucking normal mode. So I didn't see what Baelith can do. And I saw... What's her name? Lucina? The female.
Oh, sure. Marth. Yeah, yeah.
I saw her. I saw
from Awakening.
One. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw her.
Yeah, so you'll probably recognize a majority of the emblem characters.
Yeah, I just don't recognize Leaf and Sigurd.
Mm.
And Roy... I don't think I play that one, but, you know, it's Roy. So, I mean...
Yeah, you recognize him from Smash and also Blazing Sword, which is the GBA Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
So...
I did get the DLC.
Okay.
I did get it. I knew I was going to, and I was like, fuck it, I might as well just do it now. I am weak. But I only picked up two of the DLC rings so far, and I picked up Tiki and Soren.
Oh, do those not get taken away when...
No.
Oh, nice.
I still got Tiki and Soren on me, and the same with the Edelgard. Yeah, because I get that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because that one starts the others.
Right, right.
So those are the three I got. Actually, it may have been. I don't know. Tiki is busted. Soren is underwhelming. And Edelgard is just kind of, it's fine. Mm. Edelgard has this interesting mechanic where it shifts through the three, but I don't know the real benefit or the other. The only thing I noticed is they have a ability that they can use. It's not a one-off, like the emblem ability, it's another ability where it's a gambit. Like Edelgard has fire gambit, and then Clyde and what's his face?
Dimitri,
yeah. Dimitri has shield gambit, and Clyde has a poison gambit, and they all just do an attack and then deals an AoE thing. But the main ability that they use, you just attack with all three of their weapons, and I'm not really sure what the... It hits our heart pretty hard.
I do like how, like, none of the actual powers of these rings, like, feel like game breaking. You know, like you're waiting to, like, trigger the one and then you're gonna win.
Yeah, like Roy's especially, it seems really underwhelming. I haven't seen a big...
Oh, is that like blazing sword one?
Yeah, where he slashed with the sword. Like, I've seen his normal attacks do more damage than that fucking ability.
The biggest advantage of, like, having rings equipped at all times is just to, like, get those bond points so that you can
get all those other passive abilities.
Yeah, and do the, like, learn the skills and, like, pass off inherited skills just to do things like give yourself some more speed, give yourself some more luck, give yourself canter is a really good skill for people to have just so you can move again.
Sorin's ability is just a hit. It doesn't hit very hard. And then you get access to bolting, so you have a ranged magic attack, so you can pop somebody from across map.
Okay.
But so far, I have it on...
It's canonically incorrect. Sorin uses wind magic.
Yep. And his big ability is, like, he attacks with all the elements, but it finishes with, like, the big wind spell.
The thing that made Sorin so good, though, in the Radiant games was his adept skill.
Yep.
Just, like, sometimes it'll just trigger, like, here's just an extra attack.
Yep. So good. And then Tiki is really good, because not only... I put it on John, the healer.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. The little, like, trainee-type units.
And I did, because he has a passive ability himself that increases the quality of stat growth.
Mm.
So when you level up, you have a better chance of doing it. And Tiki also does that.
Oh, and nice.
So he gets, like, almost his full bar goes up every level. It's kind of funny to watch. His full stat list. So I got this healer that does melee attacks that's just getting stupid stats.
Nice.
And her big ability is she'll put one of those stones that bosses have. They have to break through the stone first on a character of your choice. So you can pop out on somebody and throw them out front, or somebody who tends to be a little bit more vulnerable. And their other attacks is they have two push attacks and a hard-hitting regular attack.
Mm.
But yeah, Tiki's really fucking good. Turns into a big-ass dragon.
Have you gotten Ike?
I have not gotten Ike. I'm only in Chapter 10.
Okay.
So I think Ike's later on.
Yeah, you'll probably get... I think you get Ike relatively soon. But his Ragnall skill is one of my favorite ones. Because it's just... you just kind of tank up for a turn. And then at the beginning of the next turn, you unleash an area of effect attack. That usually, like, will knock most... enemy characters around you down to like one-third health. It'll do quite a bit of damage, so you can just come in with everyone else. So you just send them out on a tank, set up Ragnall, let everyone cluster around them, and then send up your reinforcements after they're all been chipped down. So
stick it on your big guardian guy. What's his face?
You can put on Lewis, but I like it on Diamant.
Yeah.
Is who I had... anyway.
Is that other...
Like a lot of the characters... because I was playing on normal mode and doing a lot of grinding, which, quick side note, like, this, I really like the map design and all, like, the main maps, and they give you all these different, like, types of maps and types of objectives throughout the entire game. I like that the skirmish maps work differently, because in the skirmishes, it's just like, no, everyone's going to rush you. You're not going to be doing any sort of setup or slowly drawing them in. Like, no, they're going to come get you. So it's just a different flavor of the game that you don't get out of the main modes, the main missions. But using those skirmishes to grind up, like, you really got to keep up with it, because if characters get too far behind, like, the skirmishes will scale. They'll scale with you. And if you have characters that are too far behind... and they rush you, your survivability is a lot lower. So there are a lot of characters that I had, like especially Anna, I had to use the arena to just kind of chip, like get levels so I could actually level her up.
And I'm abusing Anna. I love Anna.
Anna's real good.
She's doing really good.
Especially like when you get her as much luck as possible. That is like the way to get money.
That's who I put Edelgard on. I just threw it on Anna. I was like, go chop that guy's head off.
Because eventually, like you've gotten like war funds before. Like yeah. They'll just like give you a bunch of... Eventually all that dries up. You won't get any more. And I would suggest not wasting that on developing, like donating to any particular reason at first.
I did tier one in the first two. Mm-hmm. And then I just was like, I'm going to stop there and see how this goes.
Yes, save it for money. I mean, you of course like can get enough money to fully develop all of the regions of the game if you feel like it. And there's like, I think the third region, if you develop it to a certain amount, you'll have like a 60% chance that if a skirmish spawns in there, it will give you like extra gold. It'll be like a gold skirmish, so you can get some money that way. So eventually it'll pay off, but you could spend a lot of time just grinding for cash.
What do you really need the cash for, though? Because weapons don't have durability anymore.
Right. Once you get all of your best weapons, like you could use the cash to try to like upgrade the weapons, use the forge.
That's true.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, Anna...
Because I upgrade Liberation, and that thing is like good. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason to use anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I upgraded twice, and the thing is like a truck.
Anna was a really standout character for me once I was able to grind her up, because the way stat growth works in the game, there are caps, but you can always use a second seal. Like, if you haven't maxed out your stats, just use a second seal, reset it, and keep on going. So she had a lot of her stats maxed out. And you want to solo, if you're farming for money, you want to solo maps with her because like it just gives her the most kills to try to get cash. So, you know, once she has high luck, just stick her with a killing edge. She'll just crit through everything. And like when it's an enemy, you position her somewhere where she's got good avoidance. She's got good avoidance naturally. Gotta
get her luck up.
Yeah, and press start to skip through the enemy turn. Every time she gets a kill that gives you cash, it'll tell you like, hey, you got cash. And then you're like, okay, skip to the next one. And you can burn through 7 or 8 skirmishes in under an hour and get cash if you're playing quickly like that. And skirmishes will spawn based on your in-game timer. So basically, like every day, you'll get X number of skirmishes that are possible to get for that day. And you can always manipulate that by manipulating your switch clock if you're really getting into the grind of it.
I was thinking about using a second seal on that paladin you get in the beginning of the game. What's his face?
Alfred?
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Thinking I'll see if I can make use out of that guy.
Okay.
See how he develops.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what his growth rates are, just his independent of his class type. He didn't turn out so great for me. Neither did his two retainers, Etier and Bouchard.
Klon right now is my best mage.
Oh, good.
He developed better than Selene and the new chick that I got.
Selene, for me, really, really good. She developed really well.
I mean, I'm using both of them, actually, because he's got Sorin, and then she has Celeste. Is there any?
Celica?
Celica. She has Celica.
And her two retainers, Luis and Chloe, really damn good.
Using Chloe. Luis I would like to take, but a lot of time I'm like, I need to cross this quickly. So, Luis is tough to take. But
he's a tank. He's not mobile.
Yeah.
But he's... the best tank in the game for me. Like, you do get Jade is another one of the tanks.
I just picked her up.
She was not a particularly good tank for me.
She looks okay, but yeah.
That
other chick, I mean, who was your mage at the end? Were you using Selene?
Yeah, Selene was my main mage. There's also some characters you haven't gotten yet.
Okay.
Because
right now the mage that you just picked up from Outcrest, very underwhelming, very slow.
Oh, God.
Extremely slow. Like, she's got one good hit, but she has no speed.
Citrine, for me, turned out really good.
Huh.
Yep. Actually, both of Alcrist's retainers, Citrine and Lapis, turned out really good. But Alcrist, he was okay. Yeah. Not amazing, but not terrible. I actually didn't...
So there's a better archer later on?
There is a better unit who uses bows later on, yeah.
Not an archer.
Not a dedicated sniper, no. Okay. But a mounted archer, so a better one.
They brought that back. What was his name that I loved?
Oh, Wrath.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always Wrath.
Wrath was fucking great.
Wrath was so good. And which one was that? Sacred Stone?
No, that was Fire Emblem. Blazing Blade.
Blazing Blade.
Yeah, just the original GBA one.
God, Wrath was so good. Mm-hmm. You always take him to that Ranger class or whatever and mm-hmm. just a wrecked face.
Yeah, really, really good. But so Diamant worked out really well for me. His you don't get his two retainers immediately, which is different. Because most of the other characters you get, like, here's an important character and they're two friends. Just the rest of the game is like that. His were Jade and some guy whose name begins with an A that's now escaping me.
Oh, yeah, it's like, I think that's Alfred. I think that's who you're thinking about.
Maybe.
And I think the other guy's like...
Amber. No, Alfred is the one you're talking about. Amber is his, is Diamond's
buddy. Oh, Amber. Yeah. Amber, that's it.
But there's, basically, like, you discover the pattern. Every region has two, like, Lord characters and their buddies. The two Lord characters in the third region were both pretty good. There are two retainers for one of them are very good, the other two not so much, the way it worked out for me. And in the fourth area, the two main characters are very good, and their retainers weren't particularly great. But you got a lot of characters to work with, and you can use a second seal on anybody and just reset their growth.
Was there a lot of side characters to pick up, like John?
There are, well, you already got Anna. Yeah, there's a handful. There's probably a good six or seven, like, optional characters that that are missable. Mm. I didn't really use a whole lot of them. You got so many that you can use that you can kind of just, you take whoever.
There's a lot of characters.
You take who you like, and if they're not working out well, throw a second seal and do some skirmishes. Start again. You can make anybody good if you just okay with putting in the time.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about weapons breaking on you. You just keep on going until who you like will beat the game for you. And I spent, I think, a total of 75 hours by the time my game file was saved. Yeah, and a good 40 hours of that was just like, cool, let's do some grinding maps. Cool, let's, for a couple hours today, the time I spend playing today, I'm going to do a bunch of grinding maps and maybe a main mission. And I maxed out a good 16, 18 characters because I found the skirmishes that fun. Yeah, really good game. Highly recommended.
Other than the story. Absolute hot trash.
Can't tell you what happened. No idea. Well... we'll wait till you get further, because I do remember some things that happened, and it is silly. You'll find out.
Silly, but not cool silly.
Oh, silly as in dumb. Dumb. And and there are things that, like, they happen once, and you're like, oh, that was dumb, and then they keep on doing it. You'll find out. Jeez.
God. Just, I don't understand. It's so bad. Like, I can't remember if... I cannot think of a Fire Emblem that had a worse story. Like, this is real bad.
Mm. It's
very lazy. Like, high school kids can write a better story than this shit. Like, this
Did you ever play Fates?
No, I did not play Fates.
This game reminds me a lot of Fates in, like, the way you're picking up characters. Also in the map design. The map design in Fates, the Conquest version, were all very good. So I think, like, I wouldn't be surprised to, like, look at the credits of this game and see a lot of the people who worked on Fates working on this game, because that's another game where...
Okay, they should not work on the story again.
Yeah, this
their is maps game. And everything, sure, go for it, but...
They should... If they're interested in crafting a story that people will be interested in reading, they should hire somebody. That would be my recommendation.
It's so bad. I bitched enough about it from the last pod, but man, that... Like, I can't.
The only other game in January was the N64 Nintendo Switch Online expansion version of GoldenEye. So, that game came out. Cool.
Eh, I don't care.
Metroid Prime Remastered came out on February the 8th. We talked a bit about the scarcity issues with that one already. I have not gotten it yet. It's a really nice looking remake. And it's not like they just up-resed it. They, like, went back and redid a lot of the
analog to aim around.
Yeah, you can use dual analog. There's like four different control options. You can use the original. You can use gyro for aiming if you feel like it. if you're that kind of person.
They really did. Yeah, they did some stuff.
Yeah, they...
I'm probably... If you get the physical, I probably end up just borrowing your physical because this game makes me feel dumb.
No, we all gonna play it at the same time. Like, this is gonna be... It's gonna be April. We're all gonna be playing it.
I hit so many walls last time playing that thing. Metroid games just made me feel dumb. I can't.
You're gonna get it this time. You're gonna do great.
Oh, the backtracking and the... Oh, yeah, that obscure thing in that one hallway...
That one,
5 hours ago.
That one bit of wall that I can now blow up because I have power bombs.
Oh, God. I just can't.
Something that they do in 2D Metroids, and it'd be really difficult to do in 3D Metroids, so I understand why they don't. But something that they do in 2D Metroids is they put all these different codes around the map. Like here's a door. It's coded this color. So now you have the power-up so you know you can go back there. They do that to an extent in... Prime with different door colors,
like certain blast shields are on and stuff,
or like it's white, so you need your ice gun. It's that kind of thing, but like destructible walls, it's not as easy to tell in a 3D game as in a 2D.
Are there destructible walls though?
In Prime,
yeah.
Oh yeah,
I didn't even fucking know there were destructible walls in
Prime. Yep, gotta use those missiles.
Ugh.
They added the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games in February. It's very cool. I've been playing Link's Awakening. I don't really have anything else to say about it.
Downloaded the Advance one. I didn't bother with the Game Boy one. There was nothing there I was really interested in.
But it's an old system.
Yeah.
So, Link's Awakening holds up really well because it's a Zelda game. The other games in there, Super Mario Land. I played it on the 3DS Virtual Console. It was okay. So a pretty good portable Mario game, but. You know, like we've talked about a lot on the Retro Show, it takes a really special Game Boy game to really stand out because it's so hampered by old hardware. But the Game Boy Advance stuff, yeah, there's a ton of great stuff on that system. Like Minish Cap's a tremendous game. Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm was out on the 16th. Ton of different Final Fantasy songs that you can play through if you feel like it.
Yep, that's the thing. Just give me my Elite Beat Agents and I'd be happy.
That'd be great.
The Switch is touchscreen.
It's true.
Come on.
You can do it.
I want my Elite Beat Agents.
Blanc came out on the 17th. I don't know if you remember this one. It was in a Nintendo Direct a while back. It's the black and white game where you're playing as a wolf and a deer. And you're going through the winter environments. I downloaded that one.
Yeah, I felt like that would be a good game for you and Dez.
I couldn't get anyone to play with me.
Not even Dez?
No, they weren't. Dez wasn't super interested. Ripley, Mika, they weren't super interested.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I think the game is definitely calibrated for two players. So I don't want to make too much of a judgment on it since I am playing solo. It's divided up into... It's a very quick game. It's like most outlets are saying 2 hours you'll get through the whole thing. It's divided up into chapters. There's a total of 10. I am in chapter 7. I played through chapters 1 through 5 in one sitting in an hour, maybe a little bit less than an hour. And then it's an okay little adventure game. I can see how this is a game that is better to play with someone who doesn't play a whole lot of video games because it is very simple.
You should just wait it. I would have played with you. I mean, what was the one game that we played together through?
Persona 5.
Oh, no, the spaceship one,
Affordable Space Adventures.
Yeah,
that is a much better game than Blanc. That game is tremendous.
Great.
That is a top 20 Wii U game.
They need to bring that. They can't really do it in the same scope as they did for the Wii U. But man, that game was great.
Mm. So, yeah, there'd have to be like this all this HUD information on the screen because you don't have a second screen
to work with. We have to probably play with two separate Switches.
I'd be down. So it's a lot of really simple puzzle solving, which character is moving under what object, which character can jump over the object, which character can give a boost to the other one, pull the crate to give yourself an extra platform to jump over. Simple stuff. I can see why it'd be more fun to collaborating with someone who doesn't play a lot of games. So I started up Chapter 6, being okay, this is kind of light and breezy, whatever. Chapter 6 is entirely escort missions.
Ugh.
Escort segments, where there's a mom duck, she walks forward, she's got her three little ducklings, and the ducklings keep getting blown back by strong winds. And you have to escort them through the strong winds to get to the mom duck checkpoint. All right, move on to the next area where they're going to get blown around by strong winds. And it is such a fucking slog, and they knew it. They knew this wasn't fun when they were doing it, because the very next chapter is, okay, now you're just going to, like, play, like, this snowboarding-style game. We're just, like, sliding down this really pleasant slope, and you're just, like, moving around obstacles, again, like, not too much in your way to hamper you. It's just light and breezy, and it's just fun. It's just pleasant. Like, so they were like, hey, we know the thing you just did was unpleasant. Here's something super pleasant that you get to do next.
Why put the unpleasant thing in the game, then?
Why put the unpleasant thing in the game? I don't know. Maybe they thought the game was too short. So, like, we gotta slow them down so this game is more than an hour and a half long.
Ugh.
I don't know. So, I got to the next part after the very pleasant sliding, and it was I couldn't figure out how to get over the next obstacle, so I was like, all right, I'm gonna take a break from this. And then I started playing more Zelda and Persona 5, so it's been a couple days since I've gone back to it, and I'll probably finish it, but you know, it's fine. It's kind of a middling game. If they, like,
how much was it?
$15. So not super expensive. If you're interested in this game, if you have, like, someone that you can play with that maybe doesn't play a whole lot of games, I'd say, like, stick it on the wish list, wait for a deep discount, because, I don't know.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it's a nice-looking game, sure. It's got a nice monochromatic style to it. Sometimes it's a little bit tough to tell where exactly you're supposed to go, but that's, like, really limited circumstances. Most of the time it's pretty obvious. But, yeah. Also out on the same day, on the 17th, Tales of Symphonia Remastered. That is not reviewing well. Which, it's a shame, because it's one of, like, the better reviewed GameCube games. But yeah, apparently this port, I guess they're, like, doing a port of a PS3 version, which, like, had a lower frame rate than the GameCube version. Apparently just seeming to be a very straightforward port, rather than making some quality of life enhancements or technical enhancements that you might expect out of a modern remake.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Kirby Return to Dreamland is coming out tomorrow at time of recording. There's a demo. Me and Ripley and Mika played through the demo. We played through it a couple of times because the demo only supports two players, whereas the main game will support up to four players, which is great because they like Kirby, and this is a really, like, simple, light and breezy game to get through. It definitely does not offer the same level of challenge as something like Return to Dreamland, which wasn't, like, an immensely challenging game, even on the wild mode, the harder mode. But yeah, this is pretty easy little game, and one they'll probably get a lot of enjoyment out of. They really got a lot of Star Allies, which was the 2D game before. But not
Forgotten Land.
Forgotten Land, yeah, they got a ton out of that game too.
Yeah.
Now, they always get a lot of mileage out of these Kirby games.
I saw a random trailer on the work TV, because we have a Switch display. Mm-hmm. Does he get a gun in that at some point?
Yeah.
I thought I saw a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. In Forgotten Land?
Which is
Forgotten Kingdom?
Terrifying to me for some reason.
Yeah. He gets, like, and when you upgrade, he gets, like, a whole spacesuit.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Just hear Kirby, you suck people up and
shoot them.
God, that's fucked up.
And
I don't know how I feel about Kirby with a gun.
You know, it'd be funny if, like, you combine, like, power-ups. Like, there's the part where he, like, absorbs a car and becomes a car. Like, you mix that with the gun, and you're just playing Twisted Metal Kirby. That's the crossover we need.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, I'm also looking forward to, like, the extra content. We talked about that on the Direct show. They're doing extra levels at the end.
It looks fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't played any of these kind of Kirby games, but yeah, that extra content looks, you're a mage
doing A-tier franchise at Kirby. Yeah. And Octopath Traveler 2 out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I have played the demo.
I probably will borrow yours, because I've never even beat Octopath 1. Mm. I mean, it's a great game. It's got great combat. It's a great art style. A lot going on. I just for some reason can't get like super hooked on it.
Mm.
But it's got everything I like, so I don't know why.
You know, and you were saying,
yeah,
on a different show. I don't know, did we talk about this on a different show? Anyway,
briefly, because I played the demo.
That it's more of Octopath Traveler, which I think is totally fair because the combat is almost exactly the same.
They added a couple little things, but at its core, it's the same.
Yeah, like that meter that builds up that gives you like just an extra little edge. It's not like a superpower, at least for the characters that I played.
And it doesn't look very hard to charge too, so that's probably why, because it is not something like an overdrive from Final Fantasy X where you got to fill up a meter.
So I started with the thief character.
Of course you did.
Because of course I did. And I got through that character's boss, and then it allows you to go into the beginning areas of the game. There are some areas that are closed off to you in the demo, like higher level areas. Like I went to a place where like, no, you got to be level 15. Also, you can't get here in the demo.
Yeah.
So I went to the north of the map and got to the cleric and played through the cleric's opening section and beat the boss. And then the two of us were able to roam around for a little bit. It's time demo after 3 hours. It's supposed to stop. And I got to a place where I was about to start up the story for the scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved. I was at the 3 hour mark, so I was expecting, okay, it's going to give me like the hey, you're done screen. But then I talked to the scholar. I was like, okay, start the scholar story. He's like, sure. And then I just kept going. The game timer stopped. We just kept on reading 3 hours, but then the game kept going. I was like, well, I'm not going to start another story now. So I shut the game off. I haven't gone back to it yet, but it just seemed like it was going to let me keep going. Like, when are you going to stop me with this demo? Like it says it's a 3 hour time limit, and you can't play through the whole game, even if it lets you keep going, because there are some areas that are just closed off to you.
Yeah.
But it kind of seemed like no, you say it was 3 hours, but I was still going.
Hmm.
But yeah.
I mean, I picked the scholar when I did the demo, and I liked his story. It was very dark.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it seems like in Octopath Traveler 1, there was a sort of dichotomy. Like, these are the sort of more dubious characters, and here's the more virtuous characters. And it seems to be that way in 2... Except I think it like inverts a little bit. Like the cleric seems to be a little bit more of a dubious character. We'll see. Like, what did you think of the scholar? Would you describe him as dubious or virtuous?
I couldn't really tell, because it was a big thing with him was he's in prison and he's trying to escape.
Hmm.
So you can't really see a dubious or virtuous mentality out of him, because he's a prisoner trying to get away because he was wrongfully accused.
Hmm.
And you see a bit of his backstory leading up to the death of his wife and daughter.
Oh, no.
That he got framed for and put in prison for. So it's just him, like, getting out of the jail. So you're, like, rooting for this guy. I mean, I liked him. It, like, even, like, cool story where he has to wear this this gag over his mouth so he can't cast spells and shit. Hmm. So, like, he's doing all this stuff without talking, trying to get like the key to escape and stuff. So I mean, it was a fun little story beat. I liked it.
So the thing,
can't really tell one way or the other.
So I can't be 100% sure, because I don't know that I've recruited any like the virtuous characters, but the more dubious characters, when you're out in just like in the field. At night, more powerful enemies will come out, but also, like, these dubious characters will put, like, debuffs on them. Like, oh, it's nighttime. Your characters will perform this action. So the thief casts blind on the enemies. It only lasts for, like, a turn, but, like, the opening turn, like, hey, you can't hit physically.
That's fun.
And then the cleric cast a debuff. It only lasted, like, a turn or two. So it's not like a huge advantage when you're out at night. But it's interesting that like maybe your party construction will matter a little bit more depending on time of day. Maybe you want to go for like a more balanced party where it's possible that maybe the more virtuous characters do something in the daylight. I can't tell one way or the other, but find out. My copy, according to Amazon, won't be arriving till Tuesday.
God, that sucks.
Which, you know, what am I paying you for, Jeff? You're supposed to get me games on release date, Jeff.
Jeffrey Bezos.
That's why I have. Bezos. That's why I have time.
No, Trump and Orr. That's born why, in 1964.
That's why I bought Prime, Jeff. What do you think I have Prime for, Jeff? Do you think I have Prime to watch The Rig and Outer Range? I don't. I don't care about your shows, Jeff. Get me my games on time.
We're going to lose that sponsorship, aren't we?
Maybe. But that's okay.
That's not good. Amazon's a big payer this week.
This is how we make our money.
Again, you could have just told me and I would have grabbed it at work for you. I only had like 2 copies, but...
Really?
Yeah, they only sent me like 2.
Jeez, what is going on?
I mean, I got a ton of Dreamland.
I can imagine.
Like 20-some of Dreamland.
First party Nintendo game.
Yeah. I got 2 copies of Octopath.
Man, that's not a good sign. That's not how you sell copies of games. You gotta have the supply out there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the first Octopath Traveler sold 1 million. 1 million plus. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they've reached more than 1 million by now.
Again, it's a great game. I got a little over halfway, but I couldn't push further than that with it.
It's a long game.
It's because I hit a wall in the Apothecary's story, which was my main character. I just hit a wall and I can't seem to beat that character, that boss on chapter 3 or something.
Mm.
And so I never went back because I had to grind up to get through them.
Now, people would always say that Octopath Traveler is a really grindy game. I don't recall ever encountering that.
It's a little grindy. I mean, I hit that wall where... I was just too weak to do it.
Like for me, like I would play the game where, you know, of course you have your main character and the main character never switches out. You're locked. I don't know if it's going to be that way in the second one. We'll see. But I would constantly be rotating the party and like, okay, let's play through everyone's chapter 1 and let's switch out the party so everyone's just kind of even leveled. All right, now let's do everyone's chapter 2. And even if you were like a couple of levels below the recommended level, by the time you would get to the boss, you'd be probably at the level. And I don't know, maybe I just have a higher tolerance for like the grindy stuff. Like I'm actually kind of looking forward to doing some grinding. Like I just did a ton of grinding in Fire Emblem. Didn't need to. I probably could have just won with the level I was at. I was just kind of having fun with it. So I don't know. Maybe it's just my personal preference that I just kind of like built up a tolerance to like the grindier games.
I'm fine. I hate grind when it hits a point where I hit a wall and now I have to go and just fight a bunch of stuff so I can get through that wall. Like, I'm perfectly fine, like, lingering in an area a little bit longer, do a few extra fights here and there as I'm progressing through. But if I hit a point where I'm like, I'm going to have to go through 20 fights in order to get through this next wall, I'm like, going into those 20 fights, I'm like, I just don't want to. I mean, it's just...
That's understandable.
I just want to do a bit by bit as I'm going through. I don't mind grinding a little bit here and there, but if I ever don't prepare accordingly, and I guess that's my fault. That is all my fault.
Well, no, I don't think
that's my fault.
I don't think it's wrong. I don't think like there. It's legit to just not like doing the repetitive thing. I mean, it's a personal preference. Like to me, if I encounter a boss who beats me and like, okay, I need to gain some levels, like my vitriolic nature is like, oh, I'll fuck you up next time, I'll be back, I'll come back like 10 levels higher on steroids, like, okay, now I'm gonna fuck you up. And to me it's satisfying, but I can understand why someone wouldn't want to put in the time to do all that. But anyway, those are the February games. It's a good lineup. And just real quick to close things out, there's a few games coming out in March worth mentioning. There's the Castlevania expansion to Dead Cells, of course. They mentioned that on the Nintendo Direct.
Woo!
It looks really
pretty.
Nice.
It looks pretty.
I mean, it's got just about everything that I would want to play in a Castlevania game. You know, it's got like the character homages, the side-scrolling action. It's got the weapons. It's got like the enemy creature designs. It looks exactly like Castlevania, except they didn't build any levels. It's all just...
It's a roguelite.
here's your randomness. And I don't... Come on. I can't do that. It's just... Whenever I have yet to play a game that uses random or procedurally generated levels where I feel like I've had to utilize all of the skills at my disposal to actually get through it. It feels a lot like the same corridors with different window dressing.
Yep.
And maybe the thing that got closest was SteamWorld Heist, because those are all like procedurally randomly generated ships that you go into, like in your world map. You like go into an area, like you can replay levels, and it builds you a different ship.
Yeah, but that's a little different in that one, because roguelikes like Dead Cells is you're just running through. It's on a smaller scope,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing runs through the same beats and same bosses over and over again.
Heist is turn-taking and tactical.
Well, Heist is turn-taking and tactical, but you're not making multiple runs with different stuff over and over again. You're not moving in a circle where you beat it and then start over and then go and beat it again.
Mm-hmm.
You're moving through one solid story, and then it has more length to it and actually has a story throughout it.
And they can also sort of... you're never having to reset your progress. They can judge, like, okay, you've beaten these other stages, so on this next stage, we know that you are able to do, like, you've mastered certain things, certain techniques.
See, I think those, in that situation, SteamWorld Heist, the randomly generated things are good, because that gives the game replayability, because the game's still going to take, like, how long did Heist take?
I don't know.
Through, like, one solid...
I'd have to look it up, I don't remember.
I mean, like a regular game length, opposed to like a run in Dead Cells would take, I don't know, a couple of hours maybe. Mm. If you're an hour, if you really run through it a lot, I don't know. I don't really know. So it's not like a full game length. So I mean, that way it gives the game replayability. I get to start the game over, and these levels are going to be different, and that seems good.
Yeah.
But roguelites are...
About 12 hours for SteamWorld Heist. So, yeah.
You're not going to do a run in Dead Cells that's going to take 12 hours.
You would hope not.
That it's going to have story beats and everything like that.
But there are some rumors that Konami might make a new Castlevania game. And we'll see.
There will be eventually.
On a long enough timeline.
Yeah. With enough monkeys in a room with typewriters, we're going to get another Castlevania.
Fatal Frame Mask of the Lunar Eclipse is out on the 9th. I'm pumped. Ryan, are you pumped? Ryan's not here. I did order his copy, so he's got
it. Oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, we're importing that game so we can have a physical copy, because it's digital only in North America, which is kind of sad.
I mean, is it going to be an English copy?
Yeah, the Asian version, I guess, is what they... habit marketed racist. is what they call it on the import site that I use, which is Play Asia, where I imported it. The Asian version is, because I guess it's multi-regional, like it's Japan, China, Southeast Asia, but Korea, but that version is multi-language and it has English subtitles.
Cool.
So yeah, I wouldn't. Obviously, they probably didn't do any English voice acting. I think even in North America.
Reading though, John.
I'm going to skip the cutscenes. They're not important. Sure. Like, what do I do? Take pictures of ghosts? Cool. I'm in. Let's do it. But it's, of course, a remake of Fatal Frame 4, which was never released in North America because it originally came out on the Wii. And they've done some significant graphical updates, not only just up-raising it, but they've done some reworking to a lot of the character models and the environments and the textures. It looks pretty nice. Looking forward to that one. I'm not sure if I'm actually going to get it on release date. This small import site gets a bit more leniency than you do, Jeff.
He's going to show up at your door and be like, listen.
Wow, you're a lot shorter than I thought you'd be. Figment 2 Creed Valley is out on the same day. Little indie game that has been on a couple of Nintendo Directs, so worth mentioning. Legend of Heroes Trails to Azure is out on the 14th. But then I guess like the big headliner, if we can call it that, for March is Bayonetta Origins, Sereza and the Lost Demon.
I mean, it is 17th. Full price.
Yeah.
It is a $59 price. I was surprised. I thought it would be cheaper.
I thought it would be like a budget price too, but apparently they think enough of this game to...
I'm probably getting it. It does look good. It does look fun, and I like these kind of quirky kind of battle systems like that. It makes me think of Astral Chain.
True.
Which I have fond memories of.
Yeah.
That underrated, great game.
I wonder if that game will ever get a sequel. Sold 1 million copies.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Good for it.
Yeah. So I think, quite an overperformance
for
a brand new IP.
That game was great, though. So it makes me, brings back warm memories of that game. So I'm probably going to get this one.
I'm definitely in to get this one as well. Because, like you're saying, looks really good. Definitely a different flavor of Bayonetta.
It's funny that this would be my first Bayonetta game.
But then you can, you know, get the other ones.
I do want to play the other ones. I do want to.
Yeah, they're real good. It's right up there in terms of just like the complexity of your attacks and your combos. Right up there with Devil May Cry.
Which I do have Devil May Cry 3 on Switch.
Nice.
I grabbed that recently. I was like, it's $10. Why not?
It goes on sale, fairly frequently. It's a good pickup.
Same with those Assassin's Creed games.
Mm.
And I mean, one day I would like to play through the Ezio collection again. So, I mean, it's there. I'll grab it eventually when it's on one of those big sales.
I keep meaning to get No More Heroes 1 and 2 because I'd like to have them on Switch. I don't know that when I'd ever have time to play through them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not the same sort of, same type of action game as a Bayonetta or a Devil May Cry. But
I'm probably not getting a new game until Bayonetta because I did just pick up Hogwarts. And that's going to eat up time.
You got to finish...
Fire and Emblem. I have Engage, which I plan on playing bit by bit as I'm going through Hogwarts, but that's going to be my main focus now. And yeah, like I said, that game, I was all I played was the fucking like tutorial mission. I just got sorted and that was it. But there's like this whole
into what thing. House?
Well, technically, I'm at the point where I will get sorted.
Oh, okay.
Which they have like those little questionnaires, so you get sorted based on that, but then you can just be like, no, I want this one. So you could just
what?
You still can.
Okay.
It'll be like, you belong to Gryffindor. You're like, fuck that noise. Give me Slytherin. Like, it's, I'm probably gonna pick Hufflepuff.
What difference does it make?
Your kind of relaxation area, your house, your dormitories is gonna be different. There's a couple quests that are gonna be a little different based on what house you're in. The main reason why I'm picking Hufflepuff is its decor is very... It looks like the Shire from Lord of the Rings. Okay. It's got, like, big round doors. It's very warm and colorful. And
which makes sense, because Gandalf is playable.
Yeah. And one of the quests that all the houses share, but they have slight difference in it, you go to Azkaban, and you only do that through Hufflepuff and not through the others. So
Des is mad. She doesn't know why. She hates when I... mix Lord of the Rings with Harry Potter.
Well, I mean, he was in both movies, right? Was Gandalf?
Ian McKellen?
Was he? I feel like he was. No, he wasn't. They look the same. Tall white guy with beard.
you put an old man with a beard in a movie, like, yeah, that guy looks familiar.
It's the same guy. You can't tell. 90% of his face is hidden.
Is that Gandalf? That's Santa. Atelier Ryza 3 out on the 24th. And MLB The Show 23 out on the 28th. Play some baseball if you want. You should play as the Astros. They're probably going to be the best. Or the Padres are going to be fucking good. The Dodgers will be very good. The Mariners, if you want like an under the radar cool
the
team.
Mayonnaise.
the Blue Jays. Will be a good team to play as. The Phillies, the Braves, both good teams to play as. We want to pick a team in this baseball game. Sam, that's all we got. You got anything else? Anything else we need to address here? Talk some more Harry Potter?
No, I only played through the tutorial.
Mm.
But yeah, it looks good. It looks so nice.
So next up, we're going to do a Pokemon show, and we'll have a Pokemon Presents to talk about. That'll be good.
Oh, yeah, we will.
And probably pick a few more Pokemon from the Scarlet Violet decks to talk about. I think we're getting to probably close to the end of that. We'll probably talk about a lot of the, what were they called? The Paradox Pokemon.
Yeah, we really got like a lot of the Paradoxes to go through and the Legendaries. Ryan and I tackled two of them, but so there's two more to do.
They're all quite good. They're all good Pokemon.
Yeah. I mean.
And then we'll keep it going with the mini show and the retro show and wrap it all up with the official show at the end of March. That's it. That's the end.
So we're all home.